podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Again, they've only got three forwards in the line-out, and it's been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing...
Welcome to a brand new year on the Attacking Scrum podcast. Many things have changed, but Welsh sides taking a hiding in the UFC is not one of them. So we'll be having a look at that tonight, which is always bound to be fun. And as soon as we've got that out of the way, we have a look at some of the other rugby news stories this week. Of which there is quite a lot. The possibility of Wales playing their home games in England for the Six Nations. There's some transfer news. There's some fitness news. All sorts going on. And there's only one man to turn to in this kind of, on these kind of weeks, and it is the Mighty Murph, who's been putting in a mighty shift for us for over a year now, week in, week out. I said you were the muddy waters of the Attacking Scrum podcast, Murph. And
that's right.
I'll let you decide which muddy waters you are.
Happy with either, to be honest. But yeah, and good for the filler weeks. And there's not actually any major news, major games or events going on to come on and have a bit of a waffle.
Oh well, I'm sure we'll be in the mood for a waffle this week. Who knows? We'll do, maybe. I think there's far too much to talk about to even get the Rothmans Rugby Yearbook out this week. So,
that's never a good sign if you don't need the Rothmans.
If you don't need the Rothmans, yeah, that's it. Maybe there's some serious off the field rugby news to talk about. But there we are. I can see on Zoom that your room is filled with the rich, luxurious smell of a Rothmans cigarette. So. So we're all good. I am a bit concerned, just before we get underway, that I'm giving more exposure to a defunct cigarette brand than we are to our actual sponsors. So a quick word for our good friends at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some top quality coffee and help out a young Welsh business, then you can do that by going to socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, Murph, do you want to start with the... should we start with the transfer news? Because it's been an interesting week, hasn't it?
Yeah, confirmed news and big rumours as well. So
absolutely. I mean, so the Cardiff signing Liam Williams one is where I want to start. I'm really not sure what to make of this. I mean, we've criticised Cardiff in the past for signing far too many international back three players, and here they are at it again. I suppose Hallam Amos will be gone as of next year, so that's one out of the equation. And obviously Liam does add a huge amount of stardust. I guess it's from his perspective that I find it is it slightly strange. Is there something that I've missed here?
I don't know. I mean, from the Blues' point of view, obviously you say Hallam Amos is retiring. Matthew Morgan was at his, I hasten to say it, but I will, his turnstile worst yesterday against Edinburgh. Mm. And then we know from recent weeks that after that you're down to Jake Beetham. Or one of the wingers covering across or whatever, you know, like Alan Summerhill or whatever, covering across the fullback, or Jason Harris covering the fullback. So it does make sense that for the point of view of their spine, mm-hmm. that they need to strengthen. But you're right, I don't know, Liam Williams, immediately the news broke, Twitter was blew up with his, well, he's only played four games for the Scarlets in 2 years.
Well, that is true. I mean, it's, it's a really difficult one to read because, you know, after he went away, played with Saracens, you know, had great success with them. It seemed like he wanted to return home, and obviously the union picking up the bulk of those wages. It seemed to make sense for all parties, really, a return to Scarlets. And yes, there's been some injury problems during that time as well. But yeah, it's weird because he's barely featured, and I don't know what the thinking is.
I think it's mainly, and I mean, obviously, international duty takes him away, but not to the point where he's only going to play four games. Yeah. It takes him away for the big tournaments, Autumn Internationals and the Six Nations. But the rest of the time, you know, there's plenty of scope for him to play best part of 20 club matches a year. So it's just injury, you know, since he's come back. I mean, we could say the same thing of Lee Halfpenny.
Yeah.
Lee Halfpenny's been out long term, and there's no date on him coming back. And so there's no difference. I think that might be a little bit of spurning a spurning a lover who's left you. You know what I mean? Liam's willing. I've never liked him anyway. Off you go.
Well, that kind of thing. Famously, I've dedicated whole podcasts to saying the same thing about Corey Hill and Matthew Screech. So
yeah. Poor old Corey Hill. You don't get to see him now at all.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's it. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. I mean, yeah. Look, I think ultimately, if Cardiff can get him playing more than four games across the course of the next two seasons, then you know, particularly in those, you know, in those European games, and you know, basically judging on this weekend, it's hard to look at Cardiff and say there are much bigger problems than signing an international class. You know, Liam Williams playing on Saturday wouldn't have helped them in the slightest, really, would it? Let's be honest. I mean,
he'd have had lots of practice. Yeah. He'd have had lots of practice because they were pouring through in the middle of the field, and the fullback was regularly the last sort of scramble defender. So Liam Williams would have had lots of practice because he is a great defender.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Hopefully that was rest because the first choice team haven't been together for 11 weeks apparently.
I think they should just stick with the Dirty Dozen. Get the
I mean, they would have kept. Yeah, the score would have been lower.
Get the.
You know, based on the Harlequins' form, yeah. The score would have been lower against Edinburgh.
I know.
I mean, I'll be getting off topic from the transfers year, obviously, but it was in the form book that result because Edinburgh have beaten Saracens away in the European tournament this last month, so it was in the form book. But the amount of space they were finding in midfield, just finding isolated props like our hip and. Going around the outside of Carey all the time, there's something really wrong with the defensive system if they're getting picked off so easily all the time. They should be in a crowd, like, so that if they do get stepped, there's someone stood next to them. But it was poor. And the Ospreys weren't much better. So
no, they weren't. I mean, it's also what seems to have passed me by is how Bradbury has turned from being a solid, dependable open side flanker to this absolute wrecking ball of an eight, which was obviously it helped by some poor defending, but by all accounts he has been in superb form this season, and he quite rightly picked up the Man of the Match award. But you know, the pack looked so much more powerful than Cardiff's, and you're right. You just hope it's rust and the kind of the ragbag bunch you played against the Harlequins and Toulouse, you know, the games that we enjoyed so much. This, you know, it was inevitable that that this was always going to happen. We said that, you know, you have to build on it, but it's, you know, it's fitting that it's FA Cup weekend this weekend as well, because this is always what happens. You know, it'll be the same for Cambridge United next week, having beaten a Premier League team in the away in the FA Cup. They'll then have to go and play bloody Fleetwood or someone, and they'll get turned over 2-1. It's getting a side to really kind of pull together for that big occasion where they're massive underdogs is one thing. Getting a side who's not played rugby for 11 or 12 weeks to come out and do it is another. So yeah, I agree. I hope it is rust, but
From where they were at half time, the score could have been a lot worse. They looked like well over 40 points written all over that game at halftime. And although they weren't amazing, it was 27-3 halftime. Although they weren't amazing in the second half, they did at least restrict the free-flowing tries, you know, that were coming pouring through off them. So
yeah, and there was a period of 10 minutes when they were down to 14 men where they just started playing Fiji 7 style rugby and looked like scoring as well. It's like, it's weird. This Cardiff team can only seem to fire with their backs completely against the wall, I think.
I mean, obviously, some of that is the fact that the game was 5 points in the bag for Edinburgh at halftime, and whatever attitude Edinburgh say they're going to take into the second half, you're still going to take your foot off the throat a little bit, and that might have been part of it. But you know, 27-3, that was easy, a 40 pointer, and I suppose I think it ended up 34 or something. So that's not a bad effort second half, really, but obviously way too late.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But it was a pretty grisly one. Should we get this UFC out of the way now? Because like I say, it was such a horrible weekend. Like I barely enjoyed a minute of the rugby, if I'm honest. It was just the Ospreys. I think, you know, it's hard to argue whether they were any better, to be perfectly honest. Again, they looked outgunned up front. And in a way, I think that's probably a bit more concerning because they haven't got that excuse of the the 11 weeks out of action. They ran out of puff against the Scarlets on New Year's Day as well. That side on paper, really, to me, should be giving Glasgow a you know, at least a run for their money. And they were never really in that game, I didn't think.
No, in many ways, it's a worse outing than Cardiff's. There's a guy playing in the centre from who I haven't really noticed before, Tui Pelotu or something. Yeah, I can't remember his name.
He's Scottish qualified. He might have even got his first cap for Scotland, actually. He sighed through them, didn't he?
Yeah, he ran over Anscombe quite a few times and everyone generally in the back line, and they just couldn't cope with him. The Scottish clubs are in good form. A lot of people were expecting Edinburgh to struggle with Cockerell leaving to go and work for the England side, and they're better.
Oh, absolutely.
They're better under Mike Blair. Yeah, a better side. They're more rounded side. Their backs are really, really firing. And Glasgow are going well as well under Danny Wilson. So, you know, cue an awful Six Nations from the Scottish coming up when their sides are playing well. But it's massive contrast with ours. You know, Ospreys were okay at one point earlier in the season, but they've fallen off a cliff in the last month or so.
Yeah, it's quite worrying, I think, because obviously there are some high-profile injuries, you know, Tipperick and Alan Wynne and Lydiot, etc. And we've said that back row resource can look a little bit stretched at times. But again, that side to me on paper, you know, you've got Adam Beard in the second row is a lion. You've got Tom Francis, Nicky Smith, Elvis. Why can't I remember Elvis's surname? Presley in the
you beat me to it.
Yeah, and then you know
Elvis Tyone.
That's right. Yeah. And then you know, and then you've got a very promising back row of Griffiths, Morgan Morris, and Jack Morgan. It's not really, you know, it's not a pack you'd expect to get blown away. And
no.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing with the Ospreys is when they've been winning games as well, it's been a very kind of like Gatland-esque, you know, grind out results, be very functional, take the points when they're on offer. And when you go behind in games, it hasn't looked like there's been a great amount of creativity to get the tries to get you back in it.
No, the only thing, obviously, the players you mentioned, they're long-term and they've been managing without them most of the season. But the only thing I did notice on the team sheet for the Ospreys was no Reece Webb.
Yeah,
I think there's a huge drop off between him and Morgan Williams whoever does the job for him, and they lose a lot of leadership in that way. So again, it wouldn't have saved them yesterday, but
no,
if they're going to play well, I think he has to be there myself at the moment.
Well, I still think there's a massive drop off between Reece Webb and every other Welsh scrum half, to be honest. And Thomas Williams was good off the bench again, and you know, and he was excellent in the games prior to Christmas in the Heineken Cup. But I still, you know, there is still that big question mark at international level. I would be very surprised if Pivac entertains the idea of having Webb in his squad. I just don't think he likes him. And so, you know, you're hoping that Thomas Williams is going to make that step up at international level, because it's different, isn't it? It's a very different game, and that level of intensity is obviously a lot bigger, and your game management has to be much, much better at test level. So we'll kind of see what happens there. Can we leave the Pro 14 for now then? Should we bury that?
If we could,
yeah,
I'd be delighted.
Yeah, if we could never speak of the Pro 14 again, that would be absolutely...
or the UFC, either one.
Or the UFC, yeah. let's go back to some of the transfer news then as well, because the Scarlets have made... I don't know if this has been confirmed yet, but BBC Wales are reporting it, so they don't tend to kind of engage in the transfer rumour stuff that the Western Mail do. But yeah, this is the Scarlets are set to sign All Blacks forward Fifita, I believe it is, from Wasps. Is he a guy you've seen a lot of, Murph? You watch a lot more English Prem than I do.
No, every time his name comes up, I can't help thinking he's the same guy as Fekitoa.
Yeah.
Plays in the centre for them.
That's right, yeah.
And he is, obviously he's playing at that standard in the competitive division, league and everything. He is a quality player, but the one that caught my eye more, even more than the Liam Williams transfer, is the only rumours, not confirmed, Patchell to Bath.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know what. I mean, unless Scarlett's have just tired of his fitness, I don't know. But I don't know. I don't know what future they see in their other tens.
Well, no. I mean, I think Costa has a bright future, but he's not there yet, is he? You know,
no, he's way off.
He's someone who needs a lot more game time and a lot more nurturing to kind of come through that. Dan Jones is your steady, you know, he's your steady Eddie, decent club player. But he's, you know, he's probably not the player you're going to build a side around. And it's weird timing because Patchell is just back. Unless, of course, this again is an agent. I don't know who his agent is, but if it's another agent kind of stirring the pot to see if there's a chance of getting a better deal out of it. Because I think it would be a massive blow, particularly as he's now back, having been out for such a long period of time.
You know, I think what you said there about his agent makes more sense because if he does go to Bath, he gives up his Welsh career.
Yeah, and right now as well, he's at a pivotal point. How old would Patchell be? 28 maybe? 28, 29?
Yeah, very late 20s.
So
yeah,
late 20s. Yeah. You know, I think that fly half berth is one that, you know, bigger is still, in my opinion, the best 10 in Wales. But again, he's the wrong side of 30 now. And obviously Patchell offers you something completely different. So if he can stay fit, you know, he's absolutely in the running. Anscombe's been struggling for form since coming back from injury. I think, you know, Sheedy has still got a way to go to make that step up and make that kind of second or that 22 shirt his own. So I think there's everything to play for Patchell. I would be very surprised if he were to give it up now in order to take a big paycheck at Bath, who, you know, have largely been garbage this entire season.
Yeah, and if it does come off, I think it tells you that not only have Scarlett's given up on his fitness. I would, if he gives up his Welsh chances, I think it suggests he's cashing in as well, because he's aware his fitness is not going to hold up.
Yeah.
Like one last decent contract before his body falls apart, kind of effort, if you know what I mean. That might be. I might be a bit insulting to him personally, but maybe that, you know, that I can't see why else at this stage he would, you know, it's not as if he's being fit and playing well and getting ignored by Wales. Every time he's vaguely fit, he gets in the squad. Yeah. So Wales are keen on him.
Well, the last time he was fit, he was second choice, you know, he was second choice, wasn't he, at the World Cup? And played in big games, you know, he played the bulk of that game against Australia in the pools. So
I think he made an autumn squad in between then and now as well, and got injured again, or I think he did. Like, you know, having barely played any comeback matches, he was back in the Welsh squad again. So it's not as if he's out of favour. There's no reason why, if he can get on the pitch and play, and he wouldn't be in. I mean, he'd be straight in my Welsh squad.
Absolutely, yeah, same here. And you know, I thought he. I mean, admittedly, it was far from perfect when he came on against. He came on against the Ospreys, but I thought he made a real difference coming off the bench. You know, just the little glimpses that the ball
that one touch
he's got.
Yeah.
And you know, the ability to give the offloads and then actually stick. And you know, and that, I mean, his kicking from the tee was horrific. But at the same time, you know, that's stuff that can be coached. I think generally speaking, he's one of the better goal kickers out of the Welsh tens that that we've got. You know, he's normally a pretty reliable kicker, so you think that would come back with a bit of practice. But
well, the biggest problem he's got, or the biggest problem he's had, is he manages to find a way to concuss himself every time he makes a tackle.
Yeah,
even though he's seems like he's 6'6", he's not, but you know, he seems
he's
that,
a big guy,
he's that rangy.
He's 6'2", yeah. 6'3", yeah.
Yeah, as soon as he makes a low tackle, he'll find a knee to headbutt in no time at all, and that's a kind of root cause of a lot of his problems initially. It's one of those rumours that catches your eye, but the more you think about it, the less it rings true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope it is a case actually of it being more of posturing from an agent rather than him thinking, right, let's get one big paycheck before the body gives up. Because, but I mean, look, either way, I don't think you could, you know, if that was the case, you probably couldn't blame him. It's a short career. But yeah. I think for all concerned, we'd like to see him in and around the Welsh setup if he can stay fit. There's been another couple that have been doing the rounds as well. while the Dragons have been on this blistering run of form, arguably their most their most prolific run of form for years of three postponed games in a row, there's a need for them to recruit, and Dean Ryan's been talking about it and casting the net further afield than what's in Wales and having a look at Welsh qualified players elsewhere. And a few of the names I've heard doing the rounds were Max Clark at Bath, who is...
Didn't know his Welsh connections.
He's born in Bridgend, I believe. So,
all right. Yeah. But didn't he play England at the 20s?
Yes, he did.
Right, okay.
He did. Right. What were the other ones? Brendan Rodgers at Ulster, the ginger hooker who's... what is his name? Bradley Roberts.
No, Bradley Roberts, yeah.
I think Brendan Rodgers is the Leicester
Liverpool
manager,
and Leicester, yeah. Celtic. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let's stick with that one, though. I think we'll continue to call him Brendan Rodgers. But yeah, he's...
I mean, if this disease of mine is catching out with everyone in 2022, I'm happy. It takes the heat off me. I'm stumbling over names every couple of minutes.
But yeah, obviously he's now got a Wales cap or two or whatever it was, and would need to join someone. I mean, there's quite a few sides in need of a hooker, to be honest. I think Cardiff could do with him.
Yeah,
I think you know,
they could have done with him yesterday.
and even the Ospreys, who've gone from having a load of hookers at their side, but with Scott retiring, with obviously the tragic events with Ivan Phillips as well, and obviously Sam Parry's struggled with injury. They're now, we've now had Dowie Lakes playing a lot more when he was kind of fifth, sixth choice hooker at one point. So. There's an argument that most of those regions could do with him. So I think he'll end up somewhere, and I can't remember the other name that was linked with the Dragons as well. But they need to, again, as every transfer period comes round, the Dragons need to strengthen. It's just a question of whether there's anything in the coffers to do it.
Yeah, I mean he's very low down the pecking order at his current club. Brendan Rodgers. Yep. So he can't be looking for a big payday at the Dragons, can he? So hopefully he is affordable. That was something that caught my eye watching games over the New Year was the prop for the Dragons new this season, who I've been calling Doge.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's Fijian. It's actually Donge.
So... You've yet to call him Doge on here. I think you've must have referred to him as the Fijian prop. But
just deliberately be vague over the details of who I'm talking about. But Donge. So I would see the team sheet with Doge on.
Yeah.
And then when the commentary's coming on, they call him Donge because they've got this thing in Fijian where there's kind of invisible N's dotted throughout their names, like Randrandra is the best example. And so, but I didn't know... Donge was a Fijian, so I didn't every time there's a G basically or a D, you just go throw an N in and hope for the best.
Well, I found that with who I've been calling for 10 years, Buffelli on the wing for Edinburgh. Gareth Rhys-Owen was pronouncing it completely different, like
Botticelli.
It wasn't Botticelli, but it was like Buffessi or something like that, and which
all right.
And again, I would have thought there was just a Spanish, Spanish double L's are like a Y, I think, aren't they? Like like Llorente and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. So yeah, that caught me by surprise. Unless he was doing the Welsh double L, I don't know.
Buffetti. Yeah. I thought it's an Italian name anyway.
He's Argentinian, isn't he?
Oh, Buffelli, all right.
I think.
Okay.
But again, there's lots of Italian...
Crossover with that country, those
lots
countries,
of Italian
yeah.
heritage in Argentina anyway. But yeah, there we go. We'll investigate further, Murph.
We've dropped the virology podcast and we've moved on to pronunciations for foreign names. Yeah.
Imagine that. Yeah, me and you doing this. God.
Dan likes a pronunciation.
Oh, Dan's horrendous. Dan
struggles with Welsh names.
Dan struggles with English names. We had one of our very early podcasts. He referred to the former Northampton director of rugby, Jim Mallander, as Melinda. like Melinda Messenger or something.
Yeah.
And there's definitely and Maro Itoje was Itoje, I think he called him.
Yeah. It stuck with me for months. I was calling him Maro Itoje for a long time. Only when he was being annoying and for England, rest of the time I call him by his real name.
Yeah, exactly. But there we go. Right. The only other bit of transfer news as well, which will probably wrap us up for the first half, Murph, is Alan Wynne-Jones looks likely that he's going to sign another year at the Ospreys. I think that if he does complete that year, though, right, you're 3 years into a World Cup cycle. He'll go and do another year. He'll pitch up at the next World Cup.
Oh yeah, I think he intends to. I think that's been a plan from quite a long way out myself. The option was Japan, wasn't it?
Mm.
It'd probably be less abrasive. The standard out there is quite supposedly quite a quick style of rugby they play, and not so much grunt work. So that would probably reduce the wear and tear on him. But it's just a lot. I mean, for international camps and what have you, it's way out. And I mean, obviously, he's got enough, just about enough caps to avoid the 60 cap rule.
I was going to say he can do it for two or twice. Three players, can't he? Yeah,
But he's got. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what kind of numbers he gets offered by the. It'll be a dual job, won't it, with the WIU and the Ospreys. I don't know what kind of numbers he gets offered, but he's got the opportunity to be a lifelong Osprey. And never have to compromise by playing, going for the whoring himself out for the big contract.
I don't imagine his post rugby career is going to be short of options either. If I'm honest,
I think
if you're Alan Wynne-Jones, you've got a number of different routes.
I can imagine him. Not being that keen on the broadcasting.
Given his general detest of the media.
His demeanour around enthusiastic journalists, you know.
But then you look at Roy Keane and how he's done it in football. You never know. Maybe that might be a route for him. But yeah, I agree. I could see him being heavily involved in the game in some way. You know, I just think he's got one of those.
Can you see him coaching?
No, I see it more of like a. It sounds weird saying an administrative role, but you know, something structural within the WRU. You know, obviously he's an intelligent bloke. He has seen Welsh rugby from the highest for the best part of 20 years. He knows the pitfalls of the regional structure. I think he is the kind of person who could bring through significant change if. The WRU were willing to look at change.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could make him, you know, obviously the Prince of Wales at some point in the next few years will be taken over as King of England. Mm. So there'd be a gap there in the market for Alan Wynne. President of the WRU, I could see that straight away. Just give it to him.
Yeah.
They probably wouldn't make him chief exec of the WIU or chairman of the WIU or anything because he's overqualified.
That's absolutely true. What about your second row reserves at the Wanderers?
How do you mean?
Well, you know,
having a run out for us.
Yeah, a couple of seasons, just manage his workload before the World Cup. One season with the Wanderers.
Well, we'd have to. The takings in the clubhouse to pay for Alan Wynne-Jones, but he could definitely. I think he'd do a job for us.
I reckon he might. Yeah, I reckon those first few training sessions would be bloody interesting.
Yeah, we got second rows who are taller than him, so you know he'd have to be on his best form. I think.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Challenge laid down. Perfect way to end the first half. Right.
No, it's not a retirement job at the Wanderers. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely not. 100% not. Good stuff. Right, we'll be back after this very, very, very quick break. Right, Murph. We've covered off some transfer comings and goings, some transfer rumours in the first half of the show. Some of the other big stories from this week are the prospect of Wales playing the Six Nations or playing their home Six Nations games in England. Any thoughts on this to start with? Obviously, it's been probably one of the biggest stories this week.
It's a massive topic, isn't it? I mean, you could easily do the whole hour on this.
Oh yeah,
easy. I mean, I'm one of those boring fuckers. I favour the cautious approach of Mark Drakeford.
Right.
Like, I just think if you can save the lives of people you're supposed to look after, then that's what you should do.
Yeah.
If you call me old-fashioned. But the one, obviously, me being me, the one where he's restricted access to sporting events has really pissed me off. I mean, close the nightclubs, close the pubs, close the hospitals, close the supermarkets, but don't ruin sport.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it. But I think that's really overcautious myself, because as I said before Christmas, that catching the virus outdoors is not easy. It's not an easy thing to do, especially if you're in any kind of breeze. Your breath is just getting blown away. It's when you're in confined spaces with the air hanging around. That's where it all gets messy. But their justification was they were trying to avoid the behaviours of people going to big sporting events like the Boxing Day thing, where they all go on public transport together or in cars together or in pubs together or wherever they do. And that's what they were trying to break up, not the actual hanging around in an outdoor setting. But people can do that. People, because they've left hospitality alone, which I don't disagree with, whatever, but people are still going to pubs and they're still going on public transport and they're still going in cars together to go to different things. So it doesn't quite ring true. And I just hope in that, because the figures, although the case rates, as probably everyone knows, are very high for this particular wave, it hasn't followed through with hospitalization or deaths, more importantly. So I'm hoping by the end of the month, there's kind of suggesting or leaning towards that anyway in the last briefing, that by the end of the month, they're going to change that rule and we'll have the Six Nations. I'm one of those where I think behind closed doors, the Prevenir dog or whatever he's called, the First Minister, has had a meeting with the WIU, said, listen, don't panic. We're gonna sort you out by the thing. Because not just WIU, but South Wales' economy suffers if that's behind closed doors.
Yeah.
So, I just hope they're not going to. And it does look, they're suggesting the peak is going to be in about fortnight's time or something. Mm. So things are, fingers crossed, going that way, where by the end of January, they'll open things up again for sport anyway. Maybe not nightclubs, I don't know. But they've talked about Tottenham, and today they've ruled out Twickenham because it's too expensive, and it's such a mess.
Oh, it is a mess, and there's all kinds of things as well that, whoever the WRU's preferred brewery is now, Heineken or whatever, if you went to Tottenham, you'd have to boot out their existing, their existing one for that week, and what if there's a clash with any of their, with any of their fixtures and all this kind of stuff. So it's a logistical, and all the sponsors and the hospitality and all that kind of stuff it would be an absolute logistical nightmare for WRU.
People have bought tickets for the Six Nations already.
Yeah, I've got some for the Scotland game.
So do they? Yeah, my neighbour has. So do they transfer to the English stadium? They'd have to, wouldn't they?
I would think so.
But is the capacity going to be like for like? Is the pricing going to be like for like? Because it's obviously pricing according to where you are in the stadium and over here is, will that marry up with other stadiums? They might have more capacity in the cheap seats.
You'd have some weird anomalies, wouldn't you? Where you'd have ended up buying a 90 quid ticket and you were sat, it's unlikely you'd be sat behind
in the guttering.
Yeah, it's unlikely you'd be sat behind a post in this day and age like you used to be at football grounds. But there would be one of those weird things. But I'm with you on this one. I hope, and I just gut feel says that there must be more that's gone on behind closed doors off the record that you would hope that because it would be nigh on impossible for you to wait 2 weeks and then go, oh right, yeah, sorry, nothing. Yeah, go, yeah, go on, go and rearrange the games now. Like, I think you'd have to pull the trigger on it tomorrow if it was going to happen, because of the amount of work that would have to get done. So, I'm
exactly.
Quite
I mean,
take place in Wales.
Yeah, it's easy to say in the press that they've been looking at English stadiums, but they don't actually, officially. They might not have said a single word to Twickenham or Tottenham, but they might have just, as a press release, said, yeah, we're looking at options over the border. Possibly knowing full well that they're going to get the nod at some stage. Is that wishful thinking?
In the same way that I'm looking at a new Mercedes. But
I got my eye on a Tesla. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, there's no danger of me ever getting one.
no.
But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I just the other thing is, like, obviously there's been I try and ignore social media as much as I possibly can now. But again, there's the predictable kind of hysteria of, oh, why are we taking it to me? And I get the argument of, well, why are you taking the Welsh pound to get spent in England? And that's the biggest argument for me, like you say, is the one to the South Wales economy. But at the same time, if you're in the WRU shoes and you had to consider it, you can't go after the couple of years that they've been through, you couldn't consider cancelling the games or playing them behind closed doors. It's just not viable. You've got to play them somewhere and keep as much money coming in as you can. And like I say, I hope it is, for everyone's sake, it takes place at the Millennium.
Yeah, and the other it's quite old statement now that came out, but there was a suggestion, or it wasn't actually a statement, someone suggested that the whole tournament should take place in England because there's no restrictions. So that because the Scottish, like, that was one of the interesting things that did come out of one of these press briefings by one of the politicians, was that in this situation, in terms of the whole of Europe, England is the outlier.
Yeah.
They're the only ones taking no steps. So someone said, oh yeah, play, because at the moment Scotland are on 500 capacity. Ireland have got even worse. I was speaking to someone this weekend. Ireland's restrictions are even worse than ours. I can't remember what their standpoint is around sporting events, but they've got more restrictions in than we have at the moment. So someone said, yeah, hold it all in England. But, well, it sounds like a World Cup then, doesn't it? Definitely doesn't sound like a Six Nations.
No, it doesn't. And, if you were holding it all in Italy, it might be one thing and there'd be a novelty factor to it and there wouldn't necessarily be a huge advantage. Like, for bloody England to have all the games at, all the games at on home.
Yeah, I mean, the French would never agree to that, would they?
I wouldn't have thought so.
I don't know what level of restrictions they're under or what.
Well, the latest news this week is there's going to be exemption for the Heineken Cup. So those games are going to be able to go ahead. And likewise, the noises coming out of Scotland seem to suggest that crowds are set to return to Scotland as well. So,
well, this is it. We haven't heard anyone flapping in Scotland about where they're going to play their games. So they must have had a tip off from Sturgeon or whoever makes the decisions up there that they're going to be okay come February. And I'd be amazed if we're forced to play over the border or behind closed doors. Now, the more we talk about it, the more I'm convinced your ticket is fine.
There you go. heard it here first.
Yeah. Take that to the bank.
take that to the bank. While we're talking about the Six Nations, Murph, a seamless segue, a little Reece Patchell offload from you there into the next topic.
Yeah, around the back.
I don't get many of them from my co-hosts. Is fitness news. So there's a lot of kind of news doing the rounds this week. Faletau is set to be fit for the Six Nations. North and Tipperick are set to miss the start. My concern over all of this is these guys have played no rugby for a very long time. So if North's not going to be fit for the start, you'd question whether he's going to be fit at all, really, because he's not played. It was like Easter last year, wasn't it? It was before the Lions tour. He bust his leg. Tips was a really, really bad injury, and Toby, as we know, was in the autumn squad having not trained at all. So, I'm very wary of rushing any of these players back.
But
if you're Wayne Pivak, what do you do? Because you could be under increasing pressure.
I cannot wait for the Six Nations squad to be announced. Mm. I know it's weeks away, and I know there's loads of rugby to go between now and then, but based on how bad the autumn internationals squad selection was, this Six Nations squad has got, for me, it's got tons of pressure on it.
Oh, yeah.
He can't fuck about like he did in the autumn internationals, picking players who aren't capable of taking the field. George North goes, where you say you question whether he's going to be fit in time. I would question whether there's any point in playing him because you know if he's fully fit, he makes the team and he makes the World Cup squad. But I know that's 18 months away, but you're not going to learn anything by rushing him back and injuring him again, or rushing him back even if it comes off. You know, you won't learn anything by rushing him back anyway. So unless he's, you know, had quite a few games with the Ospreys first, there's just no point.
Unless Murph, you are your Pivac and you're naught from three. Autumn Nation Series, and you know, beating Australia at least anyway. But I think a lot of this is going to depend on how many men the opposition gets sent off in the first couple of games.
yeah, they will be tempting to throw in the experienced players if it's going badly. But I just think you run the risk of like a Liam Williams thing, where it took him till the end of the matches to find his form because he hadn't actually played any club games. So I can't see any point. I mean, Alwyn Jones is touch and go as well.
I was under the impression Alwyn was out.
Oh.
If I'm honest, but I don't know that.
Right. Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Yeah, gut.
But there's no payoff, I don't think, in rushing any of them. When it comes to Alwyn Jones, we managed most of the autumn without him and did okay. I mean, so long as there's not too many other injuries in the second row. And then in the centre, I think that is a problem for us at the moment, but got other people who are more fully fit than they were back. You know, you got the option of picking Michael Collins or any of the players, the new guy, or any of the players he doesn't like,
Owen Watkin.
Owen Watkin is stuck on the tip of my tongue. So, there's a bit, obviously, Jonathan Davis is still going and Scott Williams is playing really well. So, that, you know, there's cover there, but I don't know. Toby Faletau, he could be up. His time could be up anyway.
Do you think?
Well, it could be. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if he comes back for Bath, no matter how well he plays, well, we got 3 weeks till the start of the tournament.
Yeah.
So we haven't played yet. No matter how well he plays in the next 3 weeks, you wouldn't pick him over Aaron Wainwright.
No, I don't think I would. And yeah, there's no bigger.
Makes the squad if he's playing. Yeah. He makes the squad if he's completely unfit, like he did in the autumn.
Does he, though? I think.
No, I don't know. That's the joke of it. But if he plays between now and the tournament, then he'll get picked because we're short of number eights. But, unless he plays, unless he plays three times really well, I wouldn't start him in the beginning of the Six Nations.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I think you've got to learn this. You've got to learn this mistake. And you're right. It's at a crucial point in his career because if you manage him properly and he comes back and gets, you know, joins Cardiff in the summer and you manage his workload properly and he gets some good form back and he's the Toby that we all know and love and, you know, what an all-time Welsh great player.
Yeah.
And you get him through to the World Cup when he's aged 33. Well, then happy days. If you rush him back now for a largely meaningless Six Nations, then you just feel that could be, you know, it's such a crucial point that you might end up doing more damage. He ends up missing more game time, and it's difficult to come back and either recover fitness or form.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good move coming back to Wales because his game time will be managed. As I've said with my Welsh man's chip many times. Between Six Nation matches, he starts a Bath
all
the time. He won't have to do that anymore if he's back over here. But, you know, also on the flip side, to me, he's a player who's barely been injured for the whole of his career.
Yeah. Prior to joining Bath.
just been so durable. Mm. Yeah. And now he's 30 plus and he seems to be injured all the time. So it could just be that his body is either breaking down or just can't handle it anymore. And it might be time for him to go on to like 16 games a season or whatever they do.
Well, the thing I think is quite easy to forget with Toby as well is that he has been playing first team rugby from a very young age. You know, he was I think he was about 19 when he broke into the Dragons first team and was playing a lot of rugby then. And from there, you think it's, you know, so although he is only 31, he's got a hell of a lot of rugby under his belt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not only that, multiple World Cups, yeah. Multiple Lions tours, you know, so that means he's skipped a lot of summers off to instead. So he's got tons of miles on the clock, yeah. But definitely a sensible move at this age to, well, especially when Bath are so shite. Yeah. But it's a good move to come back and be looked after more, I think, in Wales. Like I say, I can't really, even if I was inclined to say I wasn't a fan personally of Aaron Wainwright, he just hasn't played any rugby and there's 3 weeks to go. So, you know, I think he's got to play to be included in the squad, alone the match day squad.
Yeah, I suppose one thing that makes that decision a bit, or perhaps enhances Toby's case a bit, is that horrible looking injury for Jim Botham.
Yeah, what was that? Was that a neck injury or a head?
I don't know what it was, but it
wasn't clear, was it?
No, it wasn't. And they didn't show replays, I don't think.
No.
And even when they were showing bloody replays of stuff, they had a cameraman in the way of one of the camera angles when they were going down the one flank.
Like, the position he was in towards the end of the injury, and I'm doing the motions, just for the benefit of the listeners,
If anyone is interested in a Patreon special where you get to see Murph's actions, then we'll look into that.
We can't release this, Richard. I haven't been in hair and makeup. It looked like it might have been a really bad knee injury, but then they were bracing him up in the upper body to take him off. So I think they were anyway, were they?
Yeah.
So I couldn't be the, and it was supposedly serious because everyone was worried about him when he went to hospital and everything else. But there was a message on social media later saying he's been released and he's fine. But I couldn't be sure what he had actually done.
The BBC were reporting it as a head injury, which could be, you know, it could be absolutely anything, couldn't it? It could be a big blow to the head. It could be head and neck area. You just don't know. So we'll see. But
yeah,
I mean,
no.
It's never good when a player's taken off and given oxygen, you know, 3 weeks before a tournament starts. You'd be inclined to say that that he's not going to feature in that.
No. On the subject, didn't I read something about someone over the border having a fractured skull?
I didn't see that.
Oh, I'll have to Google it. I don't know why. I'm thinking Charlie Ewells or someone like that. And a fractured skull. Anyway.
I mean, I'm Googling Charlie Ewells now just to...
I would just go straight to fractured skull. I would have... It's a bit more chance of landing.
I don't... We'll look this up later.
Yeah, good idea. It's not going to be a big feature in the, anyway.
It's not likely to be. While we're
It's amazing there's not more, to be honest.
Yeah.
The famous one is Jamie Roberts with his squeaky forehead.
Yeah, I know. I was there that day. I played on for a further, whatever it was, 15 minutes before going.
After demolishing Stirling Mortlock, which is not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not. Different. Even though it was only whatever it was, 12, 13 years ago, different times, really.
Straight red, both players now.
Yeah, I know. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although, I don't know if you've noticed this, Murph, high tackles seem to be dropping off the agenda at the moment, don't they?
We were talking about it last time, the referees have kind of started being forgiving of the high shot if there's some kind of mitigation or some nonsense. But tackles even like just got to get lower.
Even like the seat belts and the white, because for like 2 seasons ago, anything, you know, if you just happened to catch someone on the chin, even if it wasn't a shoulder or anything like that, they were getting given as pens, and they don't seem to be now.
No. Well, I mean, if there was any kind of contact on the chin or anything like that, it started a yellow and work up if you thought it was intentional, you know. So, yeah, it's definitely changed. I can see there being an edict coming out from the rule makers now.
Yeah.
And everyone getting sent off against Wales in the Six Nations.
Maybe that's it. Maybe this is Pivak's secret, as he's got someone someone in the backroom staff who knows knows how to coach players based on the latest refereeing edicts. Because it does seem to be that way. Just while we wrap up on, obviously in future weeks we will have a preview into the Six Nations squad, because everyone will be desperate to hear what your side is, Murph.
Wayne in particular.
Exactly. You'll be waiting with bated breath. But while we're talking about number eight, like you say, you know, you would expect Wainwright to feature. Outside of that, there's been a lot of column inches written about Morgan Morris. What have you made of him so far?
I think I've been on here saying I'm not particularly impressed with the Ospreys back row, any of them, with Jack Morgan aside. Mm. But I mean, technically, they just nicked him off the Scots. Yeah. So, without Tipperick, they lack experience, and obviously Dan Lydiot. Leadership in the back row, any kind of, I'm not impressed with any of them, I'm afraid. Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting. He looks to me like he's got the raw capability, but this is something that just worries me at the moment. Is, you know, sometimes you would just spot a player playing in the pro, whatever we were at that point in time, and know that once they got into the camp, getting absolutely beasted by Gatland and McBride and Edwards would be enough to take them up to that next level, even though it was only for a few weeks of the year, that it would be enough to really find out and test the mettle of that player. And I think that's the bit that just worries me, or one of the things that worries me about the Pivak regime is, are you getting that level of individual coaching and testing that's going to prepare you as best you possibly can to become a test player? Because we knew, you know, physically, and that's often why Wales started so poorly, is they were
knackered.
They were knackered for the first game.
You'd think if that is not the case anymore, they would start tournaments better. Mm. But they haven't as yet. Certainly not in the autumns anyway. Yeah, you're right. But the thing is, I think if there was any amount of Welsh number eights knocking around the regions or anywhere, we wouldn't be mentioning Morgan Morris. Mm-hmm. But because we're so short, we're having to mention Morgan Morris. I mean, there was a big noise, not even this year, the year before, probably 2 years ago, about Carwin Tuipulotu.
Yeah,
he's never featured.
Played a game yet, has he?
Featured for the Scarlets. So that's how
I think that's the
number eights get jumped on, because we're so short of them.
It is, and that's been the perhaps a bit of the Wales Online hype train with particularly the Tuipulotu story. I'm sure they've run that same story five times. That's just meet the Welsh giant with the brilliant name who's going to be the next, you know, the next star. I think, but again, by all accounts, all the raw ability is there. But the guy's still a kid, isn't he? You know,
he didn't show much in the summertime Six Nations. He didn't go very... No. I mean, the whole team didn't go very well in that tournament, so he's got an excuse. Even Kosolo didn't have a very good tournament.
No.
It just didn't gel at all. So you can forgive him that. But you'd expect, if he's as good as people were saying 2 years ago, that he would have at least, you know, made the bench or something for the Scarlets by now. So, and you know, when going back to Morgan Morris, I don't know how much genuine attention he's getting, but if he's like being talked about possibly making the Welsh squad, if you look over the border, the way number eights are queuing up behind. Over there, I mean, it's ridiculous. We just don't compare very well to that at all. Even Scotland are starting to find some decent number eights lately. So, the guys we mentioned this weekend. So, it's a problem position. I mean, it has been for you. I mean, it's been problem position since Toby Faletau made it into the team, because as soon as he made it into the team, he was the only number eight in Wales. Yeah. And that was 2011.
Yeah.
So we've had 10 seasons of being short at eight, with Ross Moriarty covering, basically.
That's pretty much it, actually, isn't it? Yeah, you've basically had someone, either Ross Moriarty or Ryan Jones or someone covering for that period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, yeah. it remains a big concern. Murph, I was hoping we'd get a chance to chat about the Slammed documentary as well.
You haven't seen it all?
No, we've run out of time. So we'll make sure I've watched all of it for next week. And we can have a good old chat through that, because if there's one thing we do like to do, it's nostalgia. I shall leave you to brush your hair and get your packet of Rothmans and
My Rothmans, and I'm off to watch some NFL.
Good stuff. Enjoy, Murph. Good to be back on the podcast train for another year.
Cheers, buddy.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks to our sponsors as always at So Coffee Trades. A quick reminder, if you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. We will be back next week to chat more rugby with you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.